The U.S. imports more oil from Latin America than from all Middle Eastern countries combined. Oil wealth in Latin America long has generated dreams of prosperity, but in the lands of production, the reserves often have been a Midas curse of political and economic instability. In Venezuela, oil has led to class warfare, with middle-class families pitted against an invigorated lower class loyal to President Hugo Chavez. Today's story, the first of three reports on petroleum in Latin America, was reported by Anna Campoy and Olga Rodriguez, and narrated and produced by Sandy Tolan.
The transformation of Venezuela from sleepy agricultural backwater to world oil power began with a roar 81 years ago.
December 14, 1922, there was a blowout of a well that was being drilled near Maracaibo. It was known as the Days of Black Rain.
Robert Botom is a longtime Venezuelan economic analyst and unofficial historian of the country's oil industry.
For 3 days, this thing was blowing 100,000 barrels a day into the air, and it put Venezuela onto the world oil map for good.
When the rain stopped, everything in Venezuela was different. 6 years later, the country was the world's biggest exporter of oil. State planners vowed to sow the oil revenues like a crop, planning future harvests in education, healthcare, industry, and jobs. Peasants flooded the capital, private businesses demanded subsidies, the military lobbied for new hardware. Everyone came to the government for their piece.
This structure worked beautifully for 40 years, and we went from being poorer than almost any nation in the world to nipping at the heels of the first world countries, if you will.
Then came the 1973 oil embargo. World petroleum prices shot up and Venezuela's national budget quadrupled. The flood of petrodollars attracted international loans, which together built steel, aluminum, and tractor factories, a hotel on a mountaintop, the tallest skyscrapers in Latin America. Then oil prices crashed and the debt came due. In 1989, the IMF moved in with harsh austerity measures. Riots broke out, killing 200 and shattering the dream that oil would bring peace and prosperity to all.
From then on in, instead of being a country where we're growing, we've been a country that's been going downhill. And in measured in terms of income per capita, we're down over 40% since 1978. It's ghastly.
The evidence can be seen right outside Robert Botom's second-floor window. Here is a boulevard designed during the oil boom of the 1970s to be a kind of Caracas Rodeo Drive. Now, street vendors sell socks and CDs, Jesus pictures and batteries. The people here were raised on the hopes of another era.
Here there are lawyers, engineers. I have a nephew who's an engineer, and he's working as a street vendor, too.
Frankie Valliere stands beside his folding table of cosmetics and tiny bottles of perfume. He was raised believing in the dream of a grand Venezuela for all, even for people like him, the nearly three-quarters of the nation in poverty. He studied agronomy and made plans for a professional career. But Frankie's dream of upward mobility was an illusion. The oil wealth, Frankie came to believe, was not trickling down, and he became a Chavista, a supporter of President Hugo Chavez.
There's always been a mafia of the rich here that exploit the poor. Although you call yourself a professional, they leave you in misery.
With President Chavez in power and now firmly in control of PDVSA, the state-run oil company, his supporters believe that now, finally, they can get their peace. Frankie says, it's about time. Across town, the end of a mass for the anti-Chavistas in their stronghold of Plaza Altamira. A flashing message board counts up the thousands of hours, down to the second, of the group's resistance to the president. These are middle-class families for whom oil has meant opportunity. Their pride was PDVSA, considered a world-class operation on par with a Mobil or a Shell. Now it's in Chavez's hands, and the petroleum engineers and their families are stunned. These are the people the Chavistas would call los ricos, the rich who hog all the oil wealth for themselves. But it's not so simple. Threading through the crowd is a well-dressed, well-coiffed woman peddling homemade muffins to supplement the family income. Her name is Salomé Martínez. On an end table in the sitting room at Salome's house stand silver frame family photos from Italy, Spain, and Disney World. Images from another era. One neighbor says there's real hunger now in the ex-middle class. Sometimes he has to choose between eating breakfast or lunch. For others here, including Oli Sanchez and Maria Rodriguez, it's not that bad. But they lament the loss of a certain way of life. Imported whiskeys and cheeses, regular flights to Miami to shop.
It was the time of much travel, the time of many scholarships. My companions, the majority were in universities in the United States, in London.
There was so much money, such a bonanza. People didn't grasp the importance of what we really had. We used to all be Venezuelans like brothers. Now it's not like that. Now really the social classes are terribly divided. The middle class is pitted against the poor.
For these members of the declining middle class, who so fervently want Chavez out of power, the oil boom helped everyone get along. But not everyone believes petroleum was always such a lubricant of social harmony. It was a false dream, says Edgardo Lander of the Central University of Venezuela. He says the real reason for the tensions now is that the poor are trying to lay claim to the benefits of the petrostate. And the upper classes, Lander says, feel the poor were not invited to that dance.
Una gente que no estaba invitada para su baile, mal vestido, sin bañarse.
These were people who were poorly dressed, who hadn't showered, with a bad smell, eating with their hands, pinching the women, people who were coming to crash the party. The upper class feels threatened by these people who fail to stay in their place.
For the middle and upper classes, it's about Chavez as a Castro communist, a Saddam Hussein in the making, a demagogue making false promises about oil for the poor. For the lower classes, says Lander, it's about power and actually using the oil wealth for their benefit, for a change.
It is like a cultural revolution, because the lower classes were never really part of Venezuelan society. And now, all of a sudden, they have emerged to the voice of a leader in whom they identify. And that's precisely the reason for the polarization right now.
In Venezuela these days, you have to search hard for any signs of social unity. One of the few is the Caracas Metro, a well-run, efficient example of how some state planning, the sowing of the oil, paid off. And there are the thousands of miles of paved roads, the schools and hospitals. But healthcare is being cut now, free education in decline, scholarships for traveling abroad drying up. And with two sides claiming that they are the rightful heirs to the Venezuelan oil legacy, the society is more divided than ever. Few people dream anymore of all boats floating happily on a sea of petroleum. For NPR News, this is Sandy Tolan reporting.
Reporters for that story were Olga Rodriguez and Anna Campoy. Tomorrow, broken promises in Ecuador. Photographs and reports on Latin America's oil legacy are at npr.org.